Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Starting and operating a small business against all odds, living largely by your wits, you demonstrate more courage and devotion to a dream than any other non-military American in this century. All right, we are back. It's 13 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. And folks, I've got my hands full today. I'm here visiting with you with two PhDs, and I am not. And so I'm in over, way over my head here, folks, but I'm gonna make the best of it. But they're both good guys, and I know they'll help me. Let me tell you who they are. The first guy I'm going to introduce, his name is Gary Schilling. Dr. Gary Schilling is the president of Gary Schilling and Company, Incorporated, an economic consultant and investment strategist. Gary is well known for his forecasting record. He has been twice ranked as Wall Street's top economist by Institutional Investors Poll of Financial Institutions. Futures magazine ranked him the country's number one commodity trading advisor in 1993, and as far as I know, he's not even a commodity trader. How about that, folks?
We are. Oh, yeah.
He's also the author of Deflation, an outstanding book that we're going to talk about a little bit. And now Gary, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Let me introduce the next guy. His name is George Selgin. And by the way, George has been with us before, as has Gary Schilling, and Gary is a member of our Brain Trust. But George Schilling, George Selgin, is an associate professor of economics at the University of Georgia. He has also taught at George Mason University and the University of Hong Kong. Dr. Selgin's articles have appeared in many scholarly journals and also the Wall Street Journal and the Financial Times, National Review magazine as well. In 1997, he published a monogram called Less Than Zero, The Case for a Falling Price Level in a Growing Economy, which argues that mild inflation can actually be a good thing. George, welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you, Jim.
It's good to have you with us, and you guys met over on the break for a minute there. And what we're going to do today, folks, is I want these two gentlemen to talk to each other and to you about some of their thoughts on what's going on around the globe from a financial standpoint. We're going to talk a little bit about deflation. We're going to talk about some currency issues. We're going to talk a little bit about imports and exports, and we're going to try our best to make sure that we condense all that and convert it into something that will help small business owners. And Gary, I'd like to give you the floor first.
Okay. All right. Well, we're looking at a combination of really two things. One is the move toward global deflation. We've seen big declines in commodity prices over the last year, and we're now seeing it spread beyond that into lower increases in wages and virtual lack of pricing power. Many businesses in this country and indeed throughout the world simply cannot raise prices. The competition is so fierce. We're in an excess supply world. The second thing that's going on, of course, and one of the implementers of deflation, one of the 14 points I have in my book on deflation, is the spreading of the Asian contagion. And in substance, where we stand right now is that the only source of strength in the world is the U.S., and that's from U.S. consumers who are buoyed up by their huge appreciation from stocks. It's a very fragile kind of situation.
Don't forget the debt.
But the point is that it is making life tough for a lot of businesses in the lower tier, manufacturers, those involved in commodity industries, while consumers, at least so far, their spending, housing-related items are soaring. That's a dangerous situation, and I wouldn't bet on that top tier staying up forever if I were servicing that end of the spectrum.
Well, what seems to be happening, George, is that a lot of Americans, more Americans than ever before, are invested in the stock market, and they are seeing their portfolios increase significantly, and they're feeling very, very wealthy because of the success of their portfolios. But the truth is that's just paper, isn't it? And what they're doing, and this is what you were talking about, Gary, they're going out and they're buying a lot of things. And for those of us who have things to sell, we're happy for that. But they're also accumulating a lot of debt, aren't they?
Well, of course, they are accumulating debt. They have been for a long time. There have been many periods when concern has been expressed about the accumulation of debt. But quite often, nothing terrible has resulted from that. It's not clear how large the mountain of debt can be before it becomes unsustainable. And as for the growth of the stock market, it's always very dangerous to speculate about whether it's going to continue or not.
Right.
I remember how Irving Fisher in the late 1920s predicted that the market would continue to rise and was very badly burnt by it, and he was perhaps America's foremost economist at the time. So I hesitate to take a stand on whether the stock market is really about to tumble or not. A good case can be made that the fundamentals do support the market, but it's a difficult thing to determine.
Well, one thing, though, about debt is that consumers now, if you believe the statistics, are saving literally nothing out of their current income, wages, salaries, rents, interest, dividends. What they're doing is relying on stocks for their saving. But at the same time, they are putting more money into stocks through 401ks, through mutual funds, through direct buying stocks directly online, etc.
Right.
And in effect, they're borrowing to do so. Now, they may think that they're borrowing on a car or they're refinancing a house, but in actual fact, that money is going into stocks, and that is leveraging their stock position. And as long as stocks hold up, that's fine. But if stocks start down, then they're going to find that those debts are rock hard while their assets are declining. In other words, people are really leveraging their play in stocks without realizing it.
What do you think is going to go, Gary? Where do you think we're headed?
I think we've got a big bear market. Now, George is right. Hey, forecasting the future is difficult. If I really knew, I wouldn't have to work for a living, would I? But the point is that I think that we have stocks way overblown right now. They've exceeded any kind of valuation measures relative to earnings, relative to book value, relative to the economy. Any measure you can think of, stocks are way out of sight. We've got the internet craze, which rivals the tulip bulb blow off in 1636. We've got some big problems here, and I think you got a 40 to 50% decline in stocks in the offing.
Really? Wow. Okay, stand by, folks. We've got to take a quick break. Folks, we're visiting with George Selgin, associate professor at the University of Georgia in economics, and Gary Schilling, president of A. Gary Schilling and Company, I should say, Incorporated. I'll get my tongue untwisted in a second, and we'll be right back. All right, we're back. It's 24 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Our special guests are two, Gary Schilling, the president of A. Gary Schilling and Company, Incorporated, economic consultants and investment strategists, and George Selgin, Dr. George Selgin, who is an associate professor of economics at the University of Georgia. And we're talking about global economic issues, especially deflation. Now, Gary, just as we were taking a break, you dropped a bomb on us. And I want you to explain yourself because you've got some folks breaking out into a cold sweat here. You said that you were expecting a correction of what did you say, 30 to 40%?
40 to 50% in stocks. We haven't had a real for sure bear market like that since the early '70s, and of course since 1982, it's been virtually uninterrupted bull market. And the problem is that everybody believes that stocks can't go down. You get people quitting their jobs to day trade on the internet. You get this, the Beardstown ladies dispensing recipes along with stock tips and writing books about this. All kinds of nonsense going on that tells you that people are absolutely convinced they can't lose in stocks. And, of course, the prices of stocks in relation to earnings or book value of companies or dividends or anything else you can name are just at unprecedented levels. And the problem is that, it's really twofold. One is, I think that earnings are very vulnerable because the Asian contagion is spreading around the world now. Latin America, Brazil's devalued. Europe has caught it. European economies are slipping. And the other thing is, if we're right on deflation, we haven't had deflation for 60 years. Inflation is a wartime phenomenon. We've had war for 60 years. Started with World War II, then Cold War, punctuated by Vietnam and Korea, the war on poverty. Now we're at peace, and peacetime is deflationary. But nobody remembers this. Hardly, very few people are alive today who remember deflation the last time in the early 30s. So the point is that transition has got to be rough because nobody's prepared for it. And as a result, I think that one way or the other in this transition, we're going to see some major corrections in stocks, which are nosebleed altitudes.
George Selgin, the thing that concerns me about our situation here in America is not so much whether our stocks are overvalued, but what's happening around the world. I'm concerned about, as Gary says, about agent contagion. I'm concerned about what's happening in Brazil. If we can't export our stuff, or if we don't have a good relationship, a good trading relationship with these other countries, how long can America can America remain strong?
Well, there's no question, Jim, that the bad economic news in these other countries has an adverse effect on the American economy, because it does cut into our exports. On the other hand, the American economy has shown itself to be very resilient. There have been now a string of foreign economic disaster stories, and each time the prediction has been that the American economy would suffer a setback as a result, and yet that hasn't happened. Of course, there will be, I think there will be eventually a slowdown, and we are not doing as well as we would if we continue to have strong trade with these other affected countries. But we seem to have a very strong basis for economic growth that's independent of our ability to trade with the countries that have been affected. And let's remember that many of those countries are not very large in terms of the amount of trade that goes on between them and the United States.
Right. Gary, has Japan bottomed out? Are they on the rise again?
They have repeatedly been bottoming out over this decade. There have been at least five or six times that the Japanese and foreigners have been convinced that they have bottomed, but so far they have continued to disappoint. I think you got to be from Missouri as far as Japan is concerned. The basic problem is that these guys really don't want to stimulate in the way that we would see them doing to get out of their mess. They have always relied on exports to do the job. The point is, the rest of the world, except for the U.S., is weak. Nobody wants their exports. There's a lot of resistance to them.
Right.
Call it protectionism. And on top of that, they've really recently thrown in the towel on fiscal stimulus, which is, in other words, tax cuts, spending increases, which is the only way they can get out of it. Instead, they're now saying we're going to do it by monetary policy. They got interest rates down to literally zero, one basis point, if you're familiar with that term, is their overnight call rate, in other words, their central bank rate. Interest is, they're virtually handing money out of every noodle shop free, but nobody wants to borrow, nobody wants to lend. It's what they call pushing on a string with monetary policy. You can pull on it to tighten, but pushing on it doesn't get results. As a matter of fact, my last Forbes column, which many of our listeners may have read, made this point. I don't think Japan's going
Gary,
anywhere.
Stand by, Gary. We've got to take a quick break. Got a hard one coming up here. Folks, it's 29 after. Gary Schilling and George Selgin are our special guests. We'll be right back. All right, heroes, welcome back. It's 33 after the hour. Thank you very much for being with us today. Our phone number is 888-822-8255. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Our special guests are Dr. Gary Schilling, the president of A. Gary Schilling & Company, Incorporated, their economic consultants and investment strategists, and also George Selgin, who is associate professor of economics at the University of Georgia. These guys are experts in world economic issues, and that's what we're talking about, primarily deflation and what's happening in the world relative to deflation. And we're going to ask them in just a second to tell us the difference between good deflation and bad deflation. Believe it or not, there is a difference. But first, Gary, I want you to tell our audience where they can get your book.
Yeah, well, they can get it through Amazon.com, through bookstores, or they can call the publisher directly, and there's a toll-free number, 888. Let me get it here just a second. 888-346-7444.
Okay. Thanks, Gary.
888-346-7444.
Okay. Good. And, folks, I recommend you check it out. And, George, I know you've read Gary's book.
Yes, I have.
And I know you guys think a lot along the same lines on these things. George, I'd like for you to tell us your definition, explain to us the difference, in your words, between good deflation and bad deflation.
Well, as an economist, I suppose I'm bound to eventually bring in supply and demand. And the big difference between good deflation and bad deflation is that good deflation happens when goods are becoming more abundant.
Mm-hmm.
That is, if you're able to produce goods more goods out of your land, labor, and capital, then that increased productivity leads to falling prices. If the demand for if the amount of spending stays constant,
right?
So prices fall because of a greater abundance of goods. That's good deflation. Bad deflation happens when you don't have any increased abundance of goods, but consumers start spending less.
Right.
That is, there's either less money to be spent or people are hoarding the available money.
And that's what you think is happening in Japan now, right?
I think that Japan is an example where you have bad deflation going on, and you can see that, you can measure that by looking at what's happening to the growth rate of nominal GDP, which is a measure of consumers of total spending in the economy.
Right.
Bad deflation was also notoriously present in the United States and in most European economies during the 1930s.
Yeah, I'd like for Gary to take us back and give us a little bit of a historic tour of good deflation and bad deflation, Gary, because I've heard you do this before and I like the way you do it.
Yeah, well, in the late 1800s we had good deflation. That was driven by two things. One was the railroad, which was crisscrossing the nation, east, west, north, south, opened up huge new supplies of grains in the Midwest, minerals, cattle in the west, and also the Industrial Revolution was in full flower in this country, and that was took industries like steel, chemicals, farm implements, cement, glass, from cottage industries to full-blown production. Now, huge increase in supply, that drove down prices, increased demand, but supply still outran demand. In that period, 30 years at the end of the century, we had almost twice the growth in the economy on an annual rate basis as we have today, and yet prices fell 50%. Huge growth driven by the new technologies of the day. The same is true in the 1920s, the new technologies then, the driving force, excess supply, as George is pointing out, were among them were electrification, factories, homes, appliances, and everything that went with it, mm-hmm. and also the automobile that brought bridges, roads, whole new cities like Los Angeles. So that, too, was the same thing. And the Roaring Twenties, believe it or not, were a period of deflation. That's what I think we have ahead, because we now have the new techs of the day, semiconductors, computers, biotech, the Internet, telecommunications. These are the driving forces. And also, we've exported the Industrial Revolution to the rest of the world and are importing the low-cost output. In other words, we've got Europe, Eastern Europe, Latin America, Asia, in effect, producing cars, things that are yesterday's new tech, today's old tech, a lot cheaper than we can do it here. And that transformation is important to everybody running businesses, big or small, because, if you're in the old tech area, hey, life is going to be rough, particularly in deflation, because a lot of things like cars are the kinds of things that people can wait to buy. And they say, I'll wait to buy it. They're cheaper later. Suspicions confirmed. Producers have to reduce prices to get rid of the excess stocks, to use up capacity, encourages people to wait further. Very different from the new tech. So if I'm in business today, and I am in business, you got to be very careful which end of the spectrum you're in.
George, well said, Gary, and I appreciate that. George, we're throwing this deflationary word out there, and like it's this big blanket that's going out over everything. Some things, for example, in the United States, some things are in a deflationary situation right now, especially, say, commodities,
right.
Farm products. All right, but how can we have deflation if everything's not going down? Some things are going up, aren't they?
Well, in fact, I would say that although there are deflationary pressures, we don't have deflation in the United States right now. If you define deflation in the standard way as a decline in the consumer price index, which is an index that takes into account prices of many different goods and services.
Right.
In fact, that index suggests that we have very mild inflation. But I think, nevertheless, the point that both Gary and I make is valid, that there are powerful forces at work today that are tending to move us more in the direction of deflation than we've ever been in the recent past.
George, hang on to that thought. I want to pick back up on that when we come back.
Sure.
And I also want to get back and revisit some of Gary's thoughts on new technology and old technology and how one is replacing the other and how that's affecting deflation. 888-822-8255. I'm Jim Blessingame, the Small Business Advocate. Our special guests are Dr. Gary Schilling and Dr. George Selgin. Stay with us. We are back. It's 44 after the hour. I'm Jim Blessingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with two of my friends, two of your friends as well, because both of them have been on the show before. Gary Schilling, Dr. Gary Schilling, and also Dr. George Selgin. And Gary is in the marketplace and with his company, A. Gary Schilling and Company Incorporated. And also, George Selgin is a professor, associate professor of economics at the University of Georgia. He's in academia. And we're talking about deflation and what effect it's having on you in your small business. That's what we're going to be talking about primarily this segment. And Gary, in your book, Deflation, which is available all over the country in bookstores and online, chapter 28 is one of the ones I want to talk about this segment, because it really helps us to focus on some things that small business owners need to be paying attention to take advantage of the good deflation and to guard against the bad deflation. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to kind of moderate this chapter a little bit and let both of you guys jump in here. One of the things that's been if you've been listening the whole hour, folks, you've heard both of these gentlemen talk about the importance of productivity as a factor in good deflation. And I really like the fact that they mentioned that. And the first point in Gary's chapter 28 called Business Strategies for Deflation, 18 Elements, the first one is continue to cut costs and push productivity. That's critical, isn't it, Gary?
Absolutely. I mean, when you're looking at falling selling prices, the only way you can keep ahead of this, since it's unlikely you can cut wages and other costs below zero, in other words, you can keep them flat, but if your prices are declining, the only way you can bridge the gap and make a profit is to keep cutting costs, keep improving productivity, get more and more bang per buck.
And George, the way to increase your productivity is to embrace the new technology, isn't it?
Well, yes, and also improvements in management. But I think the main point is, if prices are falling because somebody's improving their productivity, that means other firms have got to get in line and keep up.
Absolutely.
So it's
yes.
Good news for consumers,
absolutely.
But it's hard work for a businessman.
You know, as exciting as it can be and as rewarding as it can be to be in business and to be a small business owner, with the way technology is going these days, it's actually a little frightening, because you can get behind in a blink of an eye, can't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Let's move on to number two, anticipate deflation. Gary, tell us what you're
talking about. The point there is that if prices are declining, you can't wait. You have to be prepared to push your suppliers for lower prices.
Yes.
And at the same time, you got to be prepared for your customers to push you for lower prices. In other words, you just can't rest on your laurels. This is a fact of life. You got to adapt to it. Let me give you an example. If you have deflation, you're going to have declining prices of real estate, and that means that building costs are going to go down as well. So it means that old buildings are going to be more expensive than new buildings.
Mm-hmm.
Well, obviously, this is a tough situation. You have to anticipate those kinds of things. You can't simply sit around and say, I got a building and, you know, I don't have to worry about it. If you own a building, you own a business, regardless, you got to expect lower prices.
Exactly. George, comment.
Yes, I think that's right. In the past, I think businessmen may have become a little bit spoiled in the sense that they could rely on a monetary policy that made it unnecessary for them to lower and even typically made it necessary for them to raise prices, but they have to be prepared to lower prices in the future, because we no longer have an inflationary monetary policy.
Number three in chapter 28 called Business Strategies for Deflation, 18 Elements. Number three is called Avoid Excess Capacity. And folks, we're taking this out of Gary Schilling's book called Deflation. Gary, tell us how to avoid
excess capacity. Well, excess capacity is expensive, and if prices are declining, that means the cost of putting on new capacity is going to be cheaper next year than it is this year. So if you've got excess capacity this year you aren't utilizing, it's going to cost you. Not only is it going to cost you because you're going to be ending up with something that's higher priced you're carrying over to next year than what you can build before your competitors are building for next year, but also interest rates can't go below zero, so you are probably going to pay a higher interest rate in relation to your selling prices, which are declining, than you have in the post-war period. Very, very important. The financing cost, and your financing cost, a real measure, is what you pay in interest in relation to your selling prices. If interest rates are still well above zero and your selling prices are falling, the gap between the two, real interest in economist terms, is brutal.
And folks, there's never been a better time to do business with those vendors who will provide you with just-in-time delivery and just-in-case delivery. That will help you to avoid excess capacity. George, your comments.
Well, of course, if productivity is improving, there are technological advances being made, plant and equipment become obsolete more rapidly.
Right.
And a firm doesn't want to be stuck having a large overhang of plant and equipment that is outmoded.
I'm going to skip over to number five, Gary, and this is emphasize new technologies, not old. We've touched on that a little bit. This is critical, isn't it?
Yeah, new technology has five interesting characteristics. One is the prices decline. It costs you less and less each year for computers. Secondly, that by declining prices, you open up huge new markets. Semiconductor chips, 20 years ago, they weren't in anybody's car. Now cars are loaded because they're so cheap. You can even get an electronic clock that works. Mechanical clocks, I never had one.
Gary, hang on to that. We're going to let you finish up those five, and we'll come back after these messages. Folks, it's 50 after the hour. We're visiting with our good friends, George Selgin and Gary Schilling. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We'll be right back. Stay with us, please. We are back. It's 54 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. I have really thoroughly enjoyed our conversation this hour with Gary Schilling, Dr. Gary Schilling of A. Gary Schilling & Company. His company is their economic consultants and investment strategists. And our other guest, who is Dr. George Selgin, Associate Professor of Economics at the University of Georgia. By the way, Gary's book is called Deflation. It's available in bookstores. It's also available online. And I recommend it to you folks. And we're talking about his chapter called Business Strategies for Deflation. And as we wrap up the hour, one of the things that you talk about, Gary, is to explore niche businesses. Oh, no, wait a minute. Before I do that, you had three other things you were going to talk about.
Yeah, yeah. Well, technology. In terms of new technologies, the third one is that they improve the productivity of those who use them.
Yep.
I mean, people who use computers, for example, or telecommunications improvements have a lot more productivity. And something where the prices are declining, it improves the productivity of the user. Hey, that's a double whammy. Fourth is that rapid obsolescence. If you're in this area, you can't wait to replace your PC till next year because it's going to be obsolete. You got to at least put in new memory boards.
Right.
And finally, new tech replaces old tech. In other words, you got an AT&T wireless. Hey, the guy who's a loser is the guy who has that bank of payphones at the airport because everybody can use their wireless even cheaper.
That's right.
Now, old tech, in contrast, those are the kinds of things that don't change in form and substance. And in deflation, prices go down. People wait for lower prices. Suspicions confirmed. They're the real losers. The gap between the new tech and the old tech really opens with deflation. That's the point.
Any thoughts, George?
Well, yes. As I was mentioning to Gary over the break, Alfred Marshall, the great English economist, made a point later in his career about how some mild deflation can be very helpful for spurring productivity because it forces businessmen to adopt the best technologies. It doesn't allow any slack in the system. It doesn't allow people to continue with obsolete equipment.
Right. George, I would like for you to, we're coming up on the end of the hour, I would like for you to take about 30 seconds and make your closing comments to my audience. Any thoughts that you have for them?
Well, yes, my main thought is that deflation is something that could be coming, but people shouldn't panic about it because if the deflation is driven by productivity, it's good news for consumers. It will make life more difficult for businessmen in the sense that they have to keep in line. They have to pursue those productivity improvements that are available. But consumers will benefit, which means most people will benefit from falling prices.
Right.
It's necessary that falling prices not be allowed to fall too much because we don't want to be in a situation of bad deflation like the 1930s.
Thank you, George. Well said. Gary, you got the stage.
Well, I think we do have deflation. George and I agree that it'll be the good deflation of excess supply, not the bad deflation of the 1930s of deficient demand. I don't see the financial crisis in the West. We have it in the Orient, but not in the West. It'll touch that off as it did in the 30s. But that doesn't mean that adapting to deflation is easy because we haven't had any for 60 years. Everybody thinks inflation is the way God made the world. It's not true. The norm in peacetime is deflation. A bet against deflation in peacetime is a bet against history. So you better adapt to it, and it's hard because we've never seen it, but you got to sit down and think, what happens if my selling prices fall? What happens if interest rates are very high in relation to those selling prices? What happens if my competitors are cutting prices? What happens if I'm really stuck? I can't reduce wages below zero change. All these things you really need to think about very, very hard.
Gary, Well said. Thank you very much, guys. And right on time, too, Gary Schilling. Thank you very much. His book is called Deflation, folks. I recommend you check it out. Gary, thank you very much. Looking forward to having you back.
Glad to be with you, Jim, as usual.
Dr. George Selgin, thank you. You did a great job once again.
You're welcome, Jim.
See you later. All right, folks, I got to wrap it up for this hour. Before I go, I want to thank my heroes, who are the most important members of this show, small business owners. Because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest country in the world. And remember, be guilty of committing a random act of kindness. This is Jim Blastingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blastingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.